Welcome to the latest episode of the Fighting Words podcast, which focuses on the StorySeeds cross-border project. I'm JJ Harrington, and I've been involved with Fighting Words as a writing mentor and facilitator since 2011. I'm delighted to bring you this episode of the podcast as it features stories, plays, and screenplays written by young writers who took part in the StorySeeds cross-border project. This episode is a joint project of Fighting Words and Fighting Words Northern Ireland and is funded by Creative Ireland and the Department of Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaeltacht, Sports and Media. What is StorySeeds? The StorySeeds project aims to promote a positive sense of self and community through creative expression. The project ran from September 2023 to February 2024. During that time, Fighting Words and Fighting Words Northern Ireland worked with thousands of children and young people, and they all have stories to tell. The project facilitators and volunteer mentors brought together schools from the counties Louth, Monaghan, Donegal, Armagh, Down, Derry, Antrim and Belfast to create new stories, plays, radio plays and screenplays about where the young writers live and what each of their communities means to them. The project culminated in the creation of many new, brilliant stories. We have had tremendous feedback. Both students and teachers have found the workshop sessions to be engaging and enormously enjoyable. We are very grateful to all of the mentors and facilitators, and of course, to the writers, who shared their creativity with us at each session. We think you will agree that each story is full of action and fun, and stars a huge range of inventive characters. Peely and Shell Bob's Curse, a short story written by participants at the Newry Shamrocks Youth Club.
The shell and the jellyfish went into the sea. "We should go to Smith Toy Shop for your birthday," Shell Bob said to Peely. "I would love to go," said Peely. "Let's go by flying boat." The boat was more like a plastic container, just big enough for the two of them. It was painted with unicorns. Shell Bob and Peely sailed towards the shop. When they got to the road, Peely pressed a button and the boat turned into a car. Peely drove straight to Smith's. "We can get new roller skates and shoes," said Shell Bob. When they got there was a robbery going on. A magician named Spiky was trying to steal all the Fortnite gift cards. He wanted to make the toys alive to become his minions. While Spiky was turning the toys alive, one of the toy dinosaurs chased Spiky down an aisle and bit Spiky in the arm. Spiky dropped all his Fortnite gift cards, and he was turned into broccoli, which the dinosaur then ate him. Just then, a worker arrived, and he could not believe his eyes. He worked there for 4 years, and he had never seen anything like this. He did not like his job, but was working there because he was saving up his money to buy a red Lamborghini. "Meh," said Jimmy Russell. He spotted the dinosaur. "What are you doing here?" "Roar!" Suddenly, Peely and Shell Bob appeared, and they were holding all the Fortnite cards the magician had dropped. Out of nowhere, Spiky appeared. Spiky chased Peely and Shell Bob. They put the cards back in the right spot, and the magician turned the cards into broccoli. Peely and Shell Bob had a special gun they fired at the magician and turned him into chocolate cake. And they ate him. They then ran out of Smith's and ran home back to the sea. They ate more chocolate cake when they got home. The Star Wars toys were well, and they were shooting broccoli, not lasers, and the broccoli hit the chocolate cake and turned it into crumbs. Shell Bob and Peely then did a sea dance. They saw a shark in the sea and were scared. They ran back to Smith's and they ate some vanilla and broccoli cake. Back at the shop, Peely and Shell Bob destroyed the Star Wars mega set and turned it into pieces. Suddenly, Spiky appeared again, and Shell Bob and Peely were so annoyed with him. Spiky stole all the alive toys from the shop, and he brought them back to his secret lair. Peely and Shell Bob turned up at Spiky's lair, and they became best friends. They then decided to take the toys back to Smith's shop and pay for them. They all went back to the headquarters in the sea in a big giant pillow, and they all lived happily ever after.
Zach, a short story written by participants at the Irish Wheelchair Association, Dundalk.
One morning, around 9 a.m., a tour bus arrived at Merhevnamer in Dundalk. On the bus was Zach. Zach was a tourist from Sweden. He was 24, had a beard, and was wearing work trousers and steel-toed boots. On the bus ride, he was listening to country music with his headphones and eating hot dogs he had brought with him. The bus stopped, and Zach got off. He had never been to Dundalk before, so he started to walk into the town centre. He decided he really wanted a coffee, but he didn't know where to go. So he walked up to a stranger, Sarah. She was nice. "Excuse me," said Zach. "Could you please tell me where I can get a nice decaf coffee?" "Just go to Custom Coffee on Newry Road. It's nice. It has buns and ice cream too," said Sarah. Zach said thank you and walked off down the street. But because this was his first time in Dundalk, he got lost. So he went up to a man who wasn't as friendly as Sarah. This was Grumpy Bob. He was wearing blue jeans and yellow leather shoes. Zach asked Grumpy Bob how to get to Custom Coffee.
"I don't know," grumbled Grumpy Bob. "Don't annoy me, I'm late. Go to the marshes."
"The marshes?" said Zach. "What's that?"
"It's a shopping centre. How do you not know that?" said Grumpy Bob. "Now go away and leave me alone."
So Zach left Grumpy Bob and walked off down the road. He saw a big shopping centre with lots of people in it. This must be the marshes. Zach went into the marshes and looked around for a coffee shop. He couldn't see one. So he went up to two girls. The two girls were Ruby and Judy. They were best friends. Ruby was 19 and Judy was 22. Ruby had pink curly hair and was wearing pink jeans and pink boots. Judy had yellow curly hair and wore a yellow dress with hearts on it. Zach asked them what there was in the marshes and where he could get a good cup of decaf coffee.
"I really need a coffee now," he told them.
Ruby told him that she wasn't sure where it was good for coffee, but he should go into Penny's. They had a sale on handbags.
"You don't need any more handbags," Judy told Ruby.
"Why not?"
asked Ruby.
"You've too many already. You've 40, said Judy.
"I've only 40, said Ruby.
Judy laughed.
Thanks, girls,
said Zach. And he left the girls arguing about handbags. But then he went into Penny's anyway. And sure enough, he couldn't resist the 3-for-1 handbag sale. He bought not one, not two, but 3 handbags. One pink, one blue, and one white. On his way out of Penny's, Zach passed Ruby and Judy. Ruby saw his handbags and gave him a thumbs up. And still, Zach had no coffee. But then he smelled fried chicken. He knew just by the smell of it, it was Kentucky Fried Chicken. His stomach rumbled. He was getting hungry. He decided to try and find a KFC. There must be one in Dundalk. So he left the marshes and set off. But then it started to rain, and then the rain became hailstones, and Zach was drenched. Zach remembered that he had forgotten his raincoat. Looking around, he decided to go to Guiney's on Clanbrassil Street to get a raincoat. He went in and bought a raincoat. And then he thought he should buy rain trousers too. Really hungry now, he finally found the KFC. When it was his turn to order from the girl at the counter, he said, "Hi, can I please have a cheeseburger and fries, a hot dog, a family bucket and more fries?" The woman behind the counter said, "You don't need all of that."
"Yes, I do," said Zach.
"That's a lot of moo-moo," the woman said, rubbing her fingers together at him. But Zach took out his card and paid with it. In the background, the KFC chef looked worried. The kitchen was hot and he had to make a lot of food.
When his food arrived, Zach sat down and ate it all really, really quickly. So quickly that when he finally stopped, he made an "urgh" sound. He felt quite sick, but he looked out the window and saw that Elisa had stopped raining. Zach left the KFC. He checked his watch. It was 1:50 p.m. His bus home was at 2 p.m. So he decided to go for the bus. The sun was out and there was a rainbow in the sky. The rainbow had loads of colours, pink, yellow, green and purple. Zach walked through a park where he saw a lot of ducks, a swing and a couple of teenagers, Tom and Dara. Zach asked them how to get to the bus stop. "It's just there across the road," said Tom, and he pointed. Zach thanked them and left the park. He fed the ducks on the way. The 100X bus arrived and Zach got on it, ready to go to the airport to go back to Sweden. The end.
Bucket List Granny. A short story written by participants of the Woodlands Juvenile Detention Centre, Bangor, County Down.
Susie was walking down Main Street in Drogheda. She was on her way to the town hall. It was 2 a.m. and it was raining. Susie was wearing a black coat and had a handbag over her shoulder. Her hands in her pockets were clutching a balaclava. Susie headed around the back of the town hall to the old fire escape. She grabbed hold of the rope and pulled the ladder down. It made a loud bang. Bobby, the night guard, was sitting in his hut watching blue lights on BBC iPlayer. He was enjoying a mug of tea and his fifth donut when he heard the noise. He turned the sound down and turned his head to listen. He heard a second bang, so he got up to investigate. Susie realized that the ladder had made a lot of noise, so she quickly hid behind a bin. From her hiding place, she saw Bobby run past with a flashlight. She took her phone out and looked up Janine's number. Three rings. Janine picked up. "Are you still my getaway driver?" asked Susie. "I'm at the spot, fam," replied Janine. Just then, Bobby tripped and fell beside the bin where Susie was hiding. The bin got knocked out of the way. Bobby looked straight at her and Susie froze, thinking he had seen her. Luckily for her, it was too dark. She hopped up and scooted up the ladder. She thought about shoulder barging through the window, but she knew it would set off the alarm. "Better go through the roof," she thought to herself. She took out a crowbar and prized the tiles off the roof. Down below, Bobby stood up, wiped the dirt off his knees and looked around. He saw a mobile phone lying there. He picked it up and read the message on the screen. "Have you got to the safe yet?"
Special Discount. A short play written by first, second and transition year students from Mulroy College, Milford, Donegal.
Scenario. Two friends. One of the character's parents goes away for a week. They've ordered a pizza and are watching a scary movie. A loud bang against the door. Vincent.
"Is that pizza?"
Katie.
"Nah, unless he fell and dropped the pizza."
Vincent.
"Will we go and look?"
Katie.
"Why don't you go and have a look out the window?"
Vincent gets up and walks up the stairs and looks out his bedroom window. There are two loud knocks on the back door. Vincent goes to his mother's bedroom and closes the door. Looks out the window, but sees no one there. He hears two wee knocks on the bedroom door. Katie heads upstairs and hides underneath her friend's bed. She's shivering and scared. Vincent.
"Who's there?"
All of the lights in the house go out. Unknown voice, whispered from inside the house.
"Get out!"
Katie gets out from under the bed and runs downstairs, but slips and bangs her head. The lights start to flicker in the house. Unknown voice, whispered.
"This is your last warning."
Vincent checks on Katie and sees that she's unconscious. He checks her breathing and pulse and throws some water on her to try and wake her up. He then runs to the telephone to ring for help. Scene 2 by second year students. Katie wakes up in Apache Pizza on Main Street in Milford. Katie.
Where am I?"
Apache man.
Who are you?"
Katie.
"I don't know."
Apache man.
How did you get here?"
Katie.
"I'm not sure."
The man working at Apache starts to pull at his beard before having an idea. Apache man.
"Would you like a job here in Milford?"
Katie.
"No, thanks."
Katie gets up to leave and looks behind the counter and sees the ghost. Unknown voice.
"This is your final warning."
Vincent's voice begins to echo around her head. Vincent.
Wake up, Katie. Wake up.
Katie comes around and finds herself lying on the couch back in Vincent's house. There is a knock on the door again. She gets up slowly and walks towards the door and opens it. Standing there is Apache Man stroking his beard. Apache Man.
Hello again.
Vincent.
Who is this fella?
Apache Man.
You were told this was your last warning.
We see a camera zooming in on this conversation. Scene 3 by TY students. Katie.
Why don't we just get 2 pizzas?
Vincent.
Why don't we get the special deal?
Katie.
I've been hallucinating so much. I could eat 2 pizzas on my own.
We hear the Apache Pizza radio jingle. Unknown voice.
I'm starved.
Vincent.
Are you eating for yourself and the ghost?
Apache Man.
This is your final chance. Order before 12 o'clock, before it's too late. Buy 2 12-inch pizzas and get a bag of chips free.
Director.
That's a wrap.
The Adventures of Rosie. A short story written by participants of the Concord Community Centre Women's Group, Antrim, Belfast.
It was a beautiful summer morning and Rosie the cat was walking in Woodvale Park. She was walking past the slides when she saw a dog. She felt frightened and ran up the nearest tree. It was a very tall chestnut tree. The dog, whose name was Coco, was at the bottom of the tree, barking at her. Get down here, barked Coco. Help, shouted Rosie. A young girl called Laura was on the swings in the play park when she heard Rosie's cry. She jumped off the swing and ran to the tree. Get away, said Laura, chasing the dog. Laura coaxed Rosie to come down from the tree. Rosie came down trembling. Laura cradled Rosie in her arms and put her inside her coat. They left the park and hopped on the 11A bus. The bus driver said nothing as Laura went straight up the stairs and sat at the front of the bus. They passed the library and the shops at Ardoyne, but Rosie didn't see any of this. She was hiding because she was still frightened. 10 minutes later, they got off the bus at the Seed and Bean coffee shop. Laura ordered a wee scone with cream and jam and a strawberry milkshake for herself and a tin of tuna and a saucer of cat milk for Rosie. They sat down near the window. Laura set the tuna and the saucer down for Rosie and took a bite of the scone. She looked at the window and couldn't believe it when she saw the dog from the park right outside the coffee shop. She looked across the road to the playing fields. In amongst the trees lurked a T-Rex called Rory. The dog saw the T-Rex and took off, his lead snapping out as he ran. Rosie poked her head out of Laura's pocket. Rory, she yelled, running after the dog.
Tick-tock, terminate. A radio play. Written by children aged between 10 and 12 years at On Green On Youth Theatre in Letterkenny.
Scene 1. Bamboa in Letterkenny on Bob's birthday. Jemima.
Right, Bob. What do you want to drink?
Bob stands looking at his phone.
Oh, go on, get me a wee grape one.
Once you get off your stupid phone, I will.
It's not a stupid phone, it's a smartphone.
Azaria comes to take their order. Azaria, what can I get you? Jemima blushes up to her ears. She stutters.
Could I have a grapefruit and a waffle?
Loudly reading Azaria's name tag.
Jemima and Azaria sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
I'm trying to do something nice for you for your birthday.
Happy birthday! Since it's your birthday, the drinks are on the house. Scene 2. Jemima and Bob sit at a table.
You seem to be having quite an attitude, even though it's your birthday.
I'm sorry, there's just someone not being so nice to me.
Pause. Azaria prepares drinks loudly.
Do you want to talk about it?
Not really.
I'll buy you a cake if you talk about it.
Jemima goes up to Azaria and asks for the cake.
I'm sorry about earlier, but do you mind if I could have 2 slices of cake with my cousin's name on the plate?
I'm so sorry, we don't have any cake on a plate, but we do have cake pops.
What flavour of cake pops do you have?
Chocolate, vanilla and red velvet.
2 red velvets, please.
I'll bring them down and sing happy birthday to him. Scene 3. Azaria has come to the table with the cake and sung happy birthday. Bob blows out the candles with a big, noisy puff of air. He makes a wish.
What did you wish for?
More TikTok followers. And more people to like me.
What if you had a third wish?
I'd want the cyberbullying to end.
Scene 4. Azaria comes over. How are you guys enjoying the cake pops? They both take a bite.
It's kind of... different. Unique. Delicious. It hits harder than a... buzz.
Bob's shoulders hunch over. He's choking.
Are you okay, Bob?
No, it hurts.
His ears and throat start swelling up. He turns red. Do you need water? Maybe I could get an EpiPen?
Yes, please.
Azaria runs to the kitchen, grabs water. She gets the first aid kit and EpiPen from behind the counter. She stabs it into Bob's thigh. He gets instant relief and his breath back.
Thank you so much. You have really helped Bob out. There's no charge for the cake pops, right?
Oh my God.
What is it?
I've been live this whole time.
Scene 5. Jemima and Azaria are now in a relationship. It is 3 weeks later. They are together at Arena 7 in Letterkenny. Oh my God, I am really bad at bowling.
No, you're not. It's only your first time.
So, how's your cousin doing since... I know you were saying he was getting bullied online.
To be honest, it got out of control. He got doxxed and then really depressed.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's an awful thing to happen.
I read some of the comments myself. They definitely weren't the nicest. Everyone saw him being a douchebag to me and were more concerned about that than anything that was happening in the background.
Pause. Bob appears in Arena 7 and approaches Jemima and Azaria.
Hey, are you talking about me?
Maybe. How are you, Bob?
I feel so much better now. I've deleted TikTok. I feel like I can breathe again.
We're away to get cake and ice cream. Do you want some?
So long as it's not red velvet.
Two Friends, Two Sides. A short story written by participants at the Woodlands Juvenile Detention Centre, Bangor, County Down.
Two Friends, Two Sides. Chapter 1, The Club. It was Saturday night in Suffolk Football Club. The clock behind the bar showed 9 p.m. Janine and Johnny were pulling pints for the crowd. It was bingo night and the room was packed. Tucker walked in looking obnoxious. He sat down at a table next to the window. Do you want a drink? Asked Johnny, walking over to take his order. Oh, I guess one, said Tucker, taking out his wallet. Janine came over with his drink. Guess a few bingo books, love. Janine went to the bar and came back with the books and a stamper. Good luck, wee Tuck, she said as she handed them over. Just then the door opened and a scruffy fella walked in. He had on a pair of ripped tracksuit bottoms and TNs. He walked over to the bar and ordered a drink. Tucker watched him out of the corner of his eye. He decided to go over to the bar for a closer look. All right, mate, said the scruffy fella. Do I know you? Said Tucker, trying to figure out why he looked familiar. It's me, Dane. Dane who? Big Dane from school. I know you now. Do you want to join me for a drink? Aye, mate, said Dane. They picked up their drinks and went back to the table by the window. Just as they were about to sit down, a brick came through the window. Chapter 2. The setup. On the brick there was a note for Dino. Janine got to it first. Who's Dino, huh? She said angrily, looking around her. Do you want to get yourself out of here? Dino looked at Tucker. Oh, don't say me, please, he whispered. Right, but we're splitting out of here in case the people are looking for you out and about. Before they left, Tucker asked Janine what the note said. She read it out. Dino, you have 3 days. Pay off that $4,000 or we take your legs off with a 9mm pistol. Simple as that. Pay up now. Tucker looked at Dino. He's in big trouble, he thought to himself. They went outside. Dino got into a taxi to head home to Poleglass. Give's your number, said Tucker before Dino left. The next morning, Tucker got a call from an unknown number. He answered. Tucker, said an unknown voice.
Speaking, mate, he says. It's a boys who put the club window in last night. What's this got to do with me? Said Tucker. You were seen last night with a fella called Dino, is that right? Said the unknown voice. Aye, mate, why? He owes me £4,000, that's why. Well, I'm nothing to do with this, so you keep me out of it. This is what you're going to do for us. You're going to set him up at the Lena Doone Park Alley, 10:30 on Monday night. We will deal with him from there. The line went dead. Tucker didn't think. He decided to go for it. He gave Dino a ring and asked him if he wanted to go for a few beers at the club. Nah, mate, not after last night, Dino said. No chance. Tucker had an idea. Meet me at the alley beside mine Monday night, 10:30. What a time, said Dino. I'm seeing the kids for a while. Oh, that's all good then. Look, I'll see you, mate, all right? On Monday, Tucker got a call from that unknown number. Is it all set? Asked the voice. Aye. It's all sorted, said Tucker. The call ended. Chapter 3. The shooting. The phone rang again. It was Dino. Can I call around now? Aye. One round. Few beers here. 10 minutes later, Dino turned up at the house. Oh, where's the beers, you racket? Said Dean, walking in. In the fridge, said Tucker. Very worried now. It was 10:20, so Tucker said to Dino, I'm on here at our club and get a fag off Johnny and Janine. As they walked to the bar, a car slowed down outside the alley. The window went down. Stop her, kiddo. Dino and Tucker stopped. Two bangs went off. Dino went to the floor, screaming. Tucker waited till the gunmen drove off. Don't let me die, said Dino, looking up at Tucker in pain. Tucker took out his phone and called 999. Ambulance, ambulance, my mate, he's been shot. Look, I need just a hurry. The police arrived in 5 minutes. They closed the area off to gather evidence before letting the ambulance know it was safe. When the ambulance arrived, Tucker took Dino to get seen to. The neighbours and a few ones from the club were out wondering what had been happening. A few days later, Dino was feeling stable. So Tucker went up to the Royal Victoria Hospital for a visit. Hell wee, Tucker, son, said Dino, as Tucker walked into the room. All right, you here, take it easy, says Tucker, lifting a glass of water with a straw and holding it up for Dino. What's the crack? How you feeling? Said Tucker. I'm a feeling up and shat. I feel like jelly from the legs up. Tucker wondered if he should tell Dino it was his fault. As he was thinking, two peelers walked in. Dino, I need to ask you a few questions, said one of them, Constable Burns. I'm no tit, said Dino, turning away. Tucker, said Constable Burns, turning to look at him. Wah, says Tucker, I'm saying none. The men looked at each other. Well, you need to come down to the station anyway. You left your hat at the scene last night. Right, yeah, Tucker shrugged. He went up to Musgrave Police Station. As soon as he arrived, an old, familiar police officer, Constable Smith, cornered him. I know you're involved in that shooting at Dino last night. Aye, dead on, you fool, said Tucker, sticking his two fingers up. Chapter 4, The Visit. I've been discharged, legs covered in a cast and 12 stitches from my chest, said Dino. Oh, that's all good. Look, at least you're right. I'll call round in a few days, said Tucker. Tucker kept to his normal routine, working, seeing the kids and sorting his life out. Then he got a knock on his door. There was two men called Mark and Stevie Lee. Tucker knew these boys. They were top men from the Lena Doone area. He was panicking. Okay, if we come in for a wee chat? Asked one of the men. Yes, mate, said Tucker. You want a wee drop of tea, lads? Are there beers? No, Tucker, mate, said Mark. We want to know if you're up for joining our organisation to keep the community right, said Stevie Lee. God, I don't know, mate. I've kids to look out for. We can support you and your family if you join. You're protected and your whole family as well, said Mark. I'll maybe have a think about it. Okay, well. Here's my number, kid. If you're willing to join. When the men left, Tucker texted Dino. What about you? You want me to call round? Not today. Kids are all going nuts here, Dino replied. Head scalded. You know the score, mate. Take it easy, big man. I'll give it a wee text if you need. No sweat, mate, replied Dino. Chapter 5. Back to the club. Tucker decided to go to the Suffolk Football Club for a pint or two by himself.
Well, we Tucker, son, said Janine, serving drinks. Ah, you know yourself, same crack, Janine, said Tucker.
Johnny wandered onto the wee stage and said, any one of you is looking a tune on.
Go for it,
said someone in the bar. As the night went on, Mark and Stevie walked in. Tucker was going for a smoke. As he walked past, Mark said to him,
"'Cause a spur fig, could ye?"
"'Yes, Mark, no problem,' said Tucker. Stevie Lee walked out with 3 pints.
"'For a spice!'
The men sat down in the smoking area.
"'Can I still be up for joining the Lanadoon organisation?' said Tucker. "'You!' shouted Mark at the top of his lungs. "'You're in, kid!' Welcome to the Volunteers!
Twist, a screenplay written by participants of the Red Door Project, Drogheda.
Interior, phone box, Navin Street, night. A phone box on a night street lit by a single street lamp. Inside the phone box is a tall, stocky, dark-haired man, Dermot, 50s. A black overcoat, out-of-control beard, flat cap. You can't make out his face. The shadows are distorting how he looks. The phone in the box rings. He answers it. Garda OS.
Listen, I know you're good at your job and all, but we have someone here fitting the description of who you're looking for. Last seen in London.
Dermot, in low voice.
I've been looking for him a long time. Finally.
Exterior, the Bridge of Peace, Drogheda, night. Night, the Bridge of Peace is in darkness. Josh O'Toole, 20s, is swaying, walking down the bridge. He's skinny, balding, holes in his secondhand clothes, dirty. He looks around, nobody else on the bridge, just a pile of newspapers on a bench. A page from the newspaper blows past him. Josh starts loudly singing Zombie by the Cranberries, then stares into the water. Still singing, he climbs onto the railing of the bridge, pulls himself up and stands, unsteady, on the railings. His singing gets lower. Suddenly, the pile of newspapers moves. A man, sleeping under the newspapers, wakes up suddenly. Woken by Josh's singing, this is JB, 20s. He sits up and looks around. He's dressed in swimming shorts, flip-flops, and has long hair and a tan. He looks like a surfer, but also he has a teardrop tattoo under his eye that makes him look a bit like Post Malone. JB, confused, half asleep.
What the hell? Where am I?
He sees Josh standing on the railing.
Hey man, what the? Get down from there!
Josh, getting a fright.
Genie Mac.
He falls backwards off the railings onto the bridge. He stares at JB.
Bro, what the hell are you wearing?
JB?
I...
Putting on a dodgy American accent.
I was surfing.
Josh?
In the buoyant at night.
JB?
What's the buoyant?
Josh?
It's the Bleeding River.
JB?
There's no buoyant in California.
Josh?
California? What has you in Drogheda?
JB, nervously.
Look, I... don't know how I got here. I was surfing in California and I just woke up on this bench.
His lips have gone blue from the cold and he's shivering. He wraps himself in the newspaper he was sleeping under. JB?
I need help to get back home. What's your name?
Josh.
Josh. Look, I'm bleeding, starving. Let's get out of here and get a noodle box.
JB?
Noodle box? What's that?
Josh?
It's savage, I'll get you one. On me, what's your name?
JB?
Brad.
Josh?
Okay, Brad, let's go.
JB follows Josh. They walk off. Exterior, street outside, Earth nightclub, night. Josh and JB walk up Stockwell Street. Even though it's a dark, wet night, Drogheda Town Centre is packed. They pass Earth Nightclub on the way. It's like a jungle, a load of people waiting outside. Young, just waiting for a fight. All the girls stare at JB. They whistle as he passes, calling out,
"Nice hairdo.
What are you at?"
"To Stevie."
Josh and JB arrive at the Noodle Box Chinese takeaway on Narrow West Street. But before they can go in, an angry man spots Josh from a distance and approaches him. Angry man to Josh.
"Where's my money?"
Josh.
"Aye."
The angry man hits Josh and JB tries to pull him away.
"Get off him!"
But the angry man doesn't stop. Almost instantly, the fight becomes a riot. About 10 or 15 hard men, drunk and roiled up, pile on. A Garda car pulls up, sirens going, and two guards get out. They look young. One looks about 13. He sees JB wearing only his surf shorts. Garda 1 trying to be nice.
"Son, where are your clothes?"
"JB?"
"My clothes."
Garda 2, angrily to JB.
"Are you on something? Hand over the drugs, mate."
JB tries to run off, but the guards grab him and push him into the back of the Garda car. Then they grab Josh. Josh.
"What did I do? I was attacked."
He gets thrown into the back of the car. The Garda car drives away with Josh and JB in the back. As a Garda van pulls up in the background and other guards pile into the rioters. Interior, Drogheda Garda Station, night. Josh and JB are wrestled and dragged into the station by the scruff of their necks. They're handcuffed. Josh.
"Get off me, pigs. Where's my Shalista?"
Garda 1.
"Son, just sit down."
Josh sits on a bench, muttering under his breath. JB looks up, sees Lexi, 20s, talking to a man with his back to us, so we can't see his face. Lexi is wearing cargo pants, has messy brown hair, and is covered in tattoos and piercings. Lexi and JB meet each other's gaze. She looks at him confidently, but there's awkwardness. JB looks confused, then relieved. Lexi looks away quickly to avoid his gaze. JB to Lexi.
"Thank God, you've come to get me."
Lexi with a bit of sass. "It's not like that." Cut to exterior, Bridge of Peace. Earlier that evening, flashback. A 97 blue Toyota pulls up on the Bridge of Peace and grunts to a stop. It's rattly and in bad nick. Lexi gets out of the driver's seat. She looks run down and exhausted. She opens the boot of the car. JB is inside. He's in his surf shorts, but there's a prison uniform rolled up beside him. Lexi. "Babe, get out. I've got to get out of here." JB gets out of the car, slow and disorientated. JB.
"Ah, me back. I have a cramp. Babe, that was rough. Who taught you to drive? Where am I?"
Lexi. "Just wait here. Somebody will be along soon for you, with clothes. Everything will be all right." She gets into the car and smirks to herself as she drives off. JB shivers. It's cold. He looks around, sketchy and on edge. He finds a Drogheda Leader newspaper on the ground, puts it over himself and curls up on a bench, trying to keep warm. He falls asleep. Cut to interior, Drogheda Garda Station, night, the present. Back to the Garda Station. JB is staring at Lexi. The man Lexi was talking to finally turns around and reveals himself to be Dermot, the man from the phone booth. He smirks at JB. Dermot.
"Got you now, John Bean. JB."
JB looks like he's seen a ghost. JB, shocked, his American accent fades away.
"Dermot!"
Josh, looking back and forth from Dermot to JB.
"What? Why are they calling you JB?"
Dermot to JB.
"You're under arrest for smuggling, multiple robberies and murder. I've been on to you for weeks. I heard you were on the run."
They're all looking at each other. Josh to himself.
Jesus.
JB glares at Lexi. JB to Lexi.
Traitor! How could you? I'll never forgive you.
Dermot to Lexi.
Job well done. We've cleared you of all your charges.
To JB.
You're mine now.
Lexi walks over to JB and gives him a spiteful, petty kiss. Lexi to JB. Have fun, babe. To Dermot. Lock him up and throw away the key. She leaves. JB and Dermot stare at each other. Cut to black. The end.
Lost and Found. A radio play written by participants of the Letterkenny Community Development Project.
Mr. O'Malley, also known as Tayshia O'Malley, died from old age. Setting. The living room of the wake of Mr. O'Malley, also known as Tayshia O'Malley. The room is full of smoke. Among the mourners are two former pupils of Mr. O'Malley who have come to pay their respects. Jim Bob, 45, is an alcoholic, and Siobhan, 45, is a high-earning professional who hasn't returned to Letterkenny since leaving for America as a teenager. She has developed an American accent. They don't recognise each other. Siobhan.
God, he looks like himself.
Jim Bob.
Sure. Who else would you expect him to look like?
Pause. Someone walks in with sandwiches.
Would you both like a sandwich?
Siobhan.
I didn't realise he was so well known.
Geez, aye, there's some crowd here altogether. Hi.
Siobhan and Jim eat sandwiches in silence for a bit.
I missed them.
You missed what?
Tato sandwiches. It's been years.
Surprised.
Do you know the story about the Tato?
Sure, of course I do. Wasn't he known as Tayshia O'Malley?
I didn't know he taught in Texas.
Jim Bob and Siobhan turn and look at each other.
I might have lived in the States, but I started out as a wee sham.
I've been in some states myself, sham.
Jim Bob recognises Siobhan as his first love.
Aw, really?
I was in some state when you left.
Scene 2. Setting. Jim Bob and Siobhan are both 17. They are sitting in a booth in the Dolphin Cafe on the main street in Letterkenny.
Go on, pass me the salt, Jimmy.
Your arms aren't that short, darling.
They continue eating.
So, the reason that we're here...
Don't tell me you're pregnant.
Pause.
I am. And I'm being taken away.
What do you mean, away?
Siobhan, starting to cry.
I have no choice. They're making me go to the States. We're all moving.
Wait, what? Hold on now, they can't do that. You're my woman, and that's my Wayne. Maybe we can make a plan. I'll go get a job.
Jimmy, it's all decided. We fly on Saturday. I'm sorry.
Scene 3. Setting. Jim Bob and Siobhan are sitting on a bench at the top of the Market Square in Letterkenny. They have just left Mr. O'Malley's wake together.
So it's been a while?
My child will be 27 and a half by now.
He is. His name is Seamus. He's a fine-looking man. He looks like you did back in the day.
I hope he handled things better than me.
Decisions were made first, Jimmy. I went through a lot of emotional stuff myself.
I lost myself when I lost you. I searched for you in the bottom of a bottle. The more I looked, the more I lost. Job, family, house, hope. I always wondered about the child over there belonging to me.
I lost myself as well. Even when I got married, I still only wanted you. I tried to find myself in a career in psychology, but sure, I was more lost than my clients. Then my marriage fell apart. When I heard of Tato's death, we had the excuse to come back that I always wanted.
Who's we?
Your son, Seamus, and his family.
I really missed that much. I'd love to meet them, but look at me. Just a washed up, mixed up alky.
Siobhan takes a picture out of her wallet. There's a long pause.
Everything in this picture is everything I have ever wanted. I always knew you'd be a good mother, Siobhan.
It's never too late for you to be a father.
So, The door is still open?
They both look at the picture.
Jeez, our son looks like the both of us.
Sure, who else would you expect him to look like?
The end.
We would like to give a very special thanks to the readers who read the stories that you have just heard. Colleen, Kian, Leonie, Hannah, Holly, Jack, Lorcan, Bethlehem, Peter, Lexi Rose, Matthew, Rebecca, Kian, and Elvis. Thank you so much for listening to the Fighting Words podcast, Story Seeds Edition. We would like to thank all of the fantastic young authors who created all the new stories, our amazing team of facilitators, mentors, and illustrators, the staff of the schools and youth services and community groups that we worked with, and to you for listening. Visit www.fightingwords.ie for more stories and to find out more about becoming a Fighting Words volunteer mentor. You too can help children and young people to tell their stories at locations all over the island of Ireland. Thank you as well to our friends at the podcast studios here in beautiful Dublin City Centre. Until next time, goodbye.